You just think we just, you know, whatever happens, we just shit another player. And everything's going to be perfect. All of our fans think that. You all think that. That's what you write about.
Unacceptable in all areas. Unacceptable coaching, unacceptable playing, unacceptable effort. Not what we're about.
You don't want to be here. There's a specific reason. Not really. You know, I think we did a poor job recruiting. If guys are coming in and immediately walking out the door because it was something different than what they thought it would be. We lied to them during recruiting, or we sold them on a dream that wasn't true.
Certainly, like I said, coached our kids to do the right thing and you know, play with poise, play with confidence, play with dignity, play with class. At the same time, we're not going to take anyone's shit either.
We want to be a big, fast, dominating, aggressive, relentless football team that nobody in the SEC wants to play.
Now, that's also a second in the West, baby.
Yes, sir.
We're ever getting excited about second. From now on, it's first, okay?
All I want to do is fucking eat. I want you to eat. I want you to eat. I want you to want this shit. Do you want it? Do you want it? Show me.
Bunch of them did it again.
Welcome into the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter, and I'm joined as always by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Doing good, Shay. Just got done with the big college football playoff rankings reveal, so we'll just start right there. And, you know, not a ton of shakeup, but the biggest news, in my opinion, we got some, you know, two of the biggest movers this week were in the SEC. So LSU, number one team in the nation. I think everyone kind of saw that coming after beating Alabama. So they jumped Ohio State. Ohio State's still there at the top at number two. We got Clemson making a big jump. I believe they were five last week. They're three now. And that's, of course, because Alabama lost. Alabama jumped by Georgia. That's kind of surprising. Georgia's number four. Alabama number five. So they're still in the playoff hunt. And then the last two teams, SEC teams listed here, Florida number 11, Auburn number 12. They both dropped a spot. I think that was because Minnesota took a big jump up. But thoughts on those, Shane? Georgia, I think, is kind of stunning there at number four over Alabama. What have we seen from the Bulldogs that makes us think they're better than Alabama at this point?
Ooh, that's the thing, man. I mean, the schedule, Georgia's schedule has obviously been a little rougher than Alabama's. You know, I think they're looking at the Florida win. But
and Notre Dame. Notre Dame's ranked two, so they've got two rank wins there.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, those guys. But anyway, I think the, like the real teams that they've played, I think the Florida one is the big one because that just happened. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I still think it's a little too early to overreact to this thing, but it definitely does raise your eyebrow because here you've got the University of Alabama barely losing to the number one team in the nation, and then, you know, you've got Georgia ahead of them, and they lost to South Carolina. So, you know, what are your thoughts? I mean, if you just look at that, the body of proof, not when they lost or how they lost or anything like that, just, I mean, do you think that Alabama should be ahead of Georgia right now, or are you good with the way things are?
Well, before I get into that, Shane, I just thought of something. I don't want to get off the beaten path here too much, but based on these rankings, this top four, you could say South Carolina's got the best win in the nation this year. And the coach is on the hot seat. What in the world's going on here? Of course, I'm kidding, but Georgia is the, you know, the top ranked loss, one-loss team. So, yeah, I think, I don't know, I guess it just depends on how this committee's going to do it. I think the biggest thing they look for is kind of like the resume of these teams. Because otherwise, I think Alabama should be ranked ahead of Georgia, but it's kind of like you said, you know, they got the win over Florida. That's crucial. Florida's number 11 in the nation. Notre Dame, I don't have their ranking right here in front of me, but they're like 16, so that's another high-ranking win. And then I think the way they're kind of projecting it, Auburn's number 12. If Georgia beats them, I mean, they'll have three really good wins, whereas Alabama will have essentially none.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's what they're looking at. I think that's kind of the way you have to do it because – you know, you could certainly say, you know, on paper, Georgia would beat the hell out of South Carolina, right? But we just watched the game. We saw the game a month ago, and South Carolina won it. So you just can't go purely off, you know, who you think is going to win this game. You have to factor in what has actually happened.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's almost like they're like honestly, if both these teams win out, there's no way you're keeping Georgia out of the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? So it's right. Like, what do they have to lose by putting Georgia in the four spot and Alabama in the five? I think you create controversy if you put Alabama in front of them and then Alabama wins out, and at some point you've got to jump them. So I mean, that has to kind of be weighing in the back of their mind, you know?
Now, let me ask you this scenario, Shane. I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole here, but so we got Ohio State number two, Clemson number three. I don't know who those teams are playing or whatever you, but let's say one of those teams loses to anyone down the stretch. LSU wins out. Georgia wins out. Alabama wins out. Georgia beats LSU in the SEC championship game. I think Georgia makes it. I think LSU makes it. And like I said, if Ohio State or Clemson loses, why don't we slide on Alabama? And they've got three SEC teams in there.
Oh, man, I would love it, dude. I would absolutely love it. You know it's going to happen one day, and I just hope that it happens this year. I think our best shot, honestly, though, is Ohio State. We've got to have them lose at some point.
Right.
Clemson's cupcake schedule, I just don't see it happening. I mean, unless they played North Carolina again, you know.
I think you've already forgotten your boldest pick of the preseason there, Shane.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, I'm kind of – maybe, you know what, maybe I put some money on Clemson and just see how things go, you know. Maybe I just
– Uh-oh, put the Shane curse on Clemson.
I'll put the curse on Clemson, and then there we go. We wrap this thing up. I get three teams in the SEC in the national playoffs. And everybody be thanking me. So, yeah, maybe I'll just use my power for the good.
I think you, it's gonna I cost you really, me $100. You really owe it to South Carolina at this point to do it.
I really do. You know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it regardless. My money, regardless of the spread, is going on Clemson whenever that game is. That's final game of the regular season. So I'm going to go ahead and say that. All right. I owe it. I do owe them. They're due, man.
You ready to go around the league?
Let's do it, man.
Now let's go around the league.
My daughters said something about me wearing a visor and need to put on a hat because I'm getting bald. So I'm going to wear a hat from here on out.
I mean, if you look over the next 6 years, I think we played Miami three times, Florida State six times, South Florida three times, Mississippi State once. So who's the SEC teams? You know, I mean, I think it's an injustice for the kids. We should mix those games up, and you should, play more teams from the West.
Why don't you start calling around and see if you can get somebody else to play us, and we'll play them. We'll play anybody you can get to play us.
At Louisiana, hold on a second.
Hey, guys! Hey! I'm having a press conference, okay? Thank you!
All right, Shane, let's start it off here in Columbia, Missouri.
M-I-Z!
Barry Odom met with the media here on Tuesday, and it sounds like we got some good news on Kelly Bryant. Sounds like he is going to play. That's going to be huge. We'll get to Odom's comments on Bryant here in a minute, but just sounds like in that last game he was really close heading into that Georgia game, but, you know, he could run on a straight line, he says, but he couldn't go side to side. That's obviously going to limit an athletic running quarterback like Kelly Bryant. So it sounds like they held him out for his best interest. Now that we know all indications, Kelly Bryant's going to play. Missouri has just been a completely different team at home. Any chance here? They've beaten Florida 2 years in a row. It seems like they always play the Gators fairly tough. Not putting the Gators on upset alert by any means. I mean, these two teams are, you know, one's trending up, one's trending down.
Mm-hmm.
But any chance here, Missouri, the back's against their wall, you know, catches lightning in the bottle here and makes this thing interesting. And keep in mind, when this spread came out, it was only, I believe, 5 in favor of the Gators. So it seems like Vegas is expecting a close game here too.
No, I don't. Unless I mean, and I don't mean to be ugly or mean, but I think they lost their spark, man. You know, and I think that spark went out there when Kale went down. You know, because honestly, this Missouri offense was serviceable, was good at times when Kelly was 100%. But this defense is night and day from when Garrett was back there as a captain, you know. Mm-hmm. And when you take that out, and I don't know, man. I think there's a lot of pressure on Kelly Bryant to make things happen, and he's gonna. They're asking him to do it with his legs, and he wasn't even enough percent to do it last week. What makes you think this week all of a sudden he's going to be, you know, Michael Vick out there running around? It's not going to happen.
Yeah, and as kind of Barry Odom gets to in just a moment here, he was asked, you know, what is going on with this offense? It was not that long ago, Shane. They were averaging something like 42 points per game. Mm-hmm. Now, they were kind of feasting on a soft schedule. I get that. And then they ran into Vanderbilt, which you would figure would go right back in that. Kentucky, which is a solid team. And then Georgia, which is obviously an outstanding defense. But I mean, they're zero against Georgia. I mean, they're barely scoring against Vanderbilt and Kentucky.
Yeah.
It's just, it's trending in the wrong direction, obviously. And it's not like the Gators are any slouch on defense either. So,
did you see what they did to the quarterback last week? What do you think they're going to do to Kelly? You know, they're going to apply the pressure. And, you know, something that Dan talks about here in a second, you know, they slept on these guys last year, mm-hmm. and it cost them. And I think that hurts Missouri's chance for an upset this year. You know, it's one thing to upset them one year, but 2 years in a row, yeah, that's a tough feat.
All right, Shay, well, let's kick it over to Barry Odom, talking about this Kelly Bryant, latest on him, you know, on working their way back from this tough deficit. And then on the offense and what in the world has happened here in the recent weeks since this the Ole Miss game was the last game they really showed any life on offense.
Coach, you said Kelly's doing good. Do you expect him to play on Saturday?
Do you not? I do, yeah. I do, and I think he's gotten clearance from our medical staff on being in a position to go play, and he looked good today running around, was able to execute and function the way that we need him to, and fully anticipating, unless there's a setback, fully anticipating playing and playing well. Yeah, that was hard last week because he really wanted to. He also, you know, look and be honest and open about it. And he understood that he was not in a position, you know, could he go run a straight line? Yeah, he probably could. But the change of direction, the things that as we got closer to game time, he would not have been able to function in the way we needed the quarterback to in that game. So I know who we are and we're, you know, at this point last year, and every team's different. They were 9 games in, we were 5-4. 5-4, 9 games in this year. Okay, let's go to work. And the more that you listen and you feel sorry for nobody feels sorry for us, right? You go work, and things are not going to be handed to you. It's not easy. There's not anything in life worth anything that's going to be easy. So this is another wall. This is another obstacle. This is another thing you've got to continue to battle through. And as soon as you give in to negative noise, then you fail and don't give yourself a chance to go play your best. So the hunger's still there. We're going to go play well. We're going to continue to prepare. And we'll get 11 guys offensively, defensively, and kicking ready to go play when their number's called. I think you look at for whatever reason we've struggled, and you know, I've got reasons I believe in and have seen, we haven't been able to run the ball, and we also to the level that we need to. We also haven't been able to connect in some vertical passing games. So I think that hurts a little bit. In you know, you go 3-and-out, and then you've got to really your belief and your confidence level on what it takes to go get the next first down. Okay, you've got to be a mentally tough dude to continue to fight through that. And then you struggle a little bit more, and you maybe turn the ball over, and you get down in the red area, and you miss a field goal. Those things are heavy if you allow them to be, and we've let that creep in a little bit. We got to find ways, playmakers got to find ways to battle out of it, competitors do, and then coaches, we've got to give them an opportunity and find ways to go. It's 3rd-and-2, we got to find a way to get 2.5. It's 3rd-and-7, we got to get 8. Whatever it is, we've got to get the first down. We do that, we kind of get in the rhythm of what we are offensively. Disappointing. It's, you know, worked offensively with ideas on things that can get us going and get us out of the slump, but we got to go do it. We got to execute. We got to find ways to move forward, because that's, you know, we're running out of opportunities to go get that done. So the urgency, the here and the now of finding ways to do it, it's obviously on us, and we gotta go get it done.
It sure does seem like it's getting cold up there in Missouri, because Barry Odom is, I don't know, he's putting us to sleep over here with these ones. Doesn't seem like he's got much answers for anything. And, you know, it was interesting you asked me about the hot seat with Barry Odom, because I certainly don't think that he is any kind of hot seat, because the truth of the matter is they are not paying him a ton. So it's not like he's got this, you know, they're not paying him all this money and then he's giving them no results. He's one of the lowest paid coaches in the SEC, and his program is, I know they've had a, you know, a slide here that's not something the fans wanted to see, but they're not at the bottom of the SEC either.
Right.
Now they need to show something here. I mean, it can quickly go from a guy that is not on the hot seat to, we need to get rid of this guy if he's getting blown out here. How big is this, particularly at home? They got Florida at home. They got Tennessee at home. And then they go to Arkansas, which is going to have an interim coach. You know, if they go 1-2, not saying he's going to be out by any means, but particularly if he gets blown out against Florida and maybe even Tennessee the way they're playing, I think Barry Odom is kind of going to be in a similar spot as old Will Muschamp.
Absolutely, man. Five-game skid, you know, you're looking at. I mean, and who knows what's going on with Arkansas. I think Arkansas is in a pretty good position. You know, you always see it when you have the interim. You saw it with Florida State. They came out and they won the game. Sometimes a little shakeup with the coaching staff just fires up the roster again. So that's also another sneaky one on their schedule. So there's potential that they could lose. They could close the season with six losses and not even have the ability to get a bowl game. Forget the bowl ban. They may not even need it, you know?
Well, let's kick it over to the other side of this matchup, Shane. Let's go on down to Gainesville. Well, Dan Mullen met with the media here on Monday to preview this matchup, and obviously we hit on it there just briefly there. They just destroyed Vanderbilt. They play the same caliber of football here against Missouri. They're going to do the same to the Tigers. I don't care where this game is played. But it is interesting that Missouri has played this team very tough. And they snuck up on them last year. Really wasn't even as close as the score indicated. And I think it was like 38-17 or something. I mean, it was just a whipping. And Dan Mullen kind of gets on this here in a second. But it seems like that game was big for Florida, in kind of similar to Kentucky game, where it seemed like when the players maybe weren't fully buying in. And I think Dan Mullen, instead of, you know, going irate or what have you, he just said, you know, this is what happens if you don't follow the plan, if you don't take to coaching. Because after these losses, I mean, it's just like they flipped a switch. And it seems like it's already happened early, because you lose to Georgia. That was a big question. How do they respond against Vanderbilt? Well, they sure as hell responded here. And I kind of expect them to do the same here against Missouri.
I think you're right. I think you never can count Missouri out. I mean, they've got enough talent on that roster to beat just about anybody in the SEC. Mm-hmm. I believe that. And there's been flashes of it. You know, there's been flashes of it this season. But, you know, they've kind of had some issues here toward the late. But if they can stop Florida from running the ball and make them one-dimensional, I think they could have an opportunity to make this a ball game. Mm-hmm. Because I think Kelly can keep them in it if he truly is 100%. But that's something they've really had a hard time doing. Ever since Ole Miss, they've averaged about 200 rushing yards against them. You know, it's just they've not had the ability to slow down any rushing attack, and that's why these teams are just kind of manhandling them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely going to be a tough outing here, but we got to see some life from Missouri, and that point spread makes me think that we may, you know, this could be like a rallying game where they know, yeah. I mean, hell, this may be their bowl game, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't sound, at this rate, I don't expect any kind of resolution. I don't know if they're going to just continue to fight it. Remember, they're technically bowl eligible while the appeal's going, but if you're just going to be a six-win team, are you really, I don't know if you're really fighting it at that point. I don't know. Well, that remains to be seen, but I'm very curious to see what we're going to get from this game. But one thing I did note on my rewatch there of the Florida Vanderbilt game, Shane, Kadarius Toney, he seems to be rounding back into form for the Gators. That's huge. I mean, we know Florida's already loaded at receiver, but getting back arguably their most explosive player on offense, he just went off there against Vanderbilt, starting to round into form. It just makes the Gators that much more dangerous, and it's really a shame that he missed so much time, because it would have been interesting to see how their season played out had he been available for more games, you know what?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's kick it over to Dan Mullen, Shane, who talks about Kadarius Toney on playing at 11 a.m. in Columbia. We'll see who that favors this weekend. And then, like I kind of hinted at earlier, on how last season's loss to Missouri may have actually helped his Florida program.
What is the challenge of playing in Columbia at 11 a.m.? In November.
That's not Florida. That's why we live in Florida. I was looking at their temperature right now. It's like 22 and snowing. Huh? Be 8? Yeah. It's like cold. But it's a dry 8, I've heard. Right? It's a dry cold. No. No, you know what? It'll be what it'll be. You got to go up and you got to play. To me, you know, I mean, an early morning kick. We've played some early morning kicks. I like it. Get up and go play. If you're a competitor, I don't care. Like I said, I don't care. Put the ball down at 2 o'clock in the morning in the middle of a parking lot. Let's go play. And if that's not your mindset, I mean, you're not really a competitor. I don't care about the situation, the atmosphere, where we're in. Competitors want to go play no matter what the situation is. So get ready to go get up there. Go and find a way to get a win.
First, yeah, you kind of set me up, said put the ball down at 2 a.m. It was last year after that Missouri loss when you gave the whole, if you want a thumb wrestle speech, I'll beat you right now.
Yeah.
How did you see the guys respond to that following week? And I think you reeled off 10 straight after that loss.
We did? Well, then they responded good. No, I think it is. I think it's guys learning about just making sure they understand what it means to be a competitor sometimes, you know, and how to handle it and to how to focus on what's important. You know, I think there's so much that goes on around, you know, these guys have so much going on around them, so much pressure, so much outside noise. They're young kids playing the game, you know what I mean, of whether it is, you know, all the pressures from families, pressures from everybody back home, expectations, you know, that come. I mean, these guys, you know, now it starts with recruiting. I mean, everybody's so hyped up in recruiting and, you know, all of this. And so those pressures come with all of that. And then, you know, you're a student athlete. You're here trying to get at one of the premier academic schools in the country, and you're competing in the classroom. Pressures of getting better. And then, you know, hey, okay, well, I want to go win a championship. And I think after the last years when we played them, we just, you know, I think we've kind of been eliminated from being able to play for the championship pretty much. And you weren't focused on what's important, which is if they're going to keep score, on a compete, you know, the motivation you need to go play the game is they turn the scoreboard on and someone keeps the score. That's the only motivate. I mean, that you don't need any more. I mean, if you need more motivation than that, I mean, you're not much of a competitor. But I think our guys maybe were, you know, they're being pulled in so many directions and forgetting the aspect of, we got a shot. Hey, well, that foot hits the ball next Saturday, they're going to keep score and we want to win. And so we got to do everything in our power to make that happen. And, you know, and how we practice and how we prepare and all of that stuff. And that's what's important. And if you lose focus on that, that's when you can start to not play well.
And then after going back.
Yeah, how do you guys get Kadarius? I mean, look like the old Kadarius the other day. We ask you this all the time. How do you get the guy more touches? I mean,
well, we find different ways. We found a couple different ways the other day. You know, we have him in the pass game getting it. And the thing is, we have a lot of depth at receiver. So, you know, I mean, it's – and as you guys have seen, it's not like always in the pass game. It's like, okay, just get this guy the ball. We kind of take what the defense gets. You know, so it's not like we have a lot of plays that are designed just to get a specific receiver the ball. We have ways to move people around where we can expect to get them the ball. But still, if they give you a certain coverage, you know, if we call this play, the ball's going to go here. Or if they run this defense, it'll go here. This defense will go here. This defense, it'll go there. So, you know, we tried to do the different things I think we did the other day, move him into the backfield, throw him some, a reverse pitch, try to get him a screen or those type of things. Because, like, you know, we saw the other day when he has the ball, exciting things happen.
All right, Shane. So Florida, you know, they're in an interesting spot because, you know, in all likelihood, eliminated from the East, eliminated from the college football playoff. But you would not be able to tell that by the way they played last Saturday. They are still fighting hard for, you know, respect, trying to move up in the rankings, playing just in case Georgia slips. I mean, you can't rule out Georgia losing to Auburn. And the way Texas A&M is improving every week, you can't rule out Texas A&M beating Georgia. So,
yeah,
I'm not saying there's no chance in hell, you know, and it seems like the Gators are playing that way. It seems like they're still fighting for everything. They're fighting for respect, fighting to move up in the rankings. And I'm just fascinated to see if they're able to do that here, 11 a.m. in Columbia in this dry weather.
Yeah, I just, you know, one thing I like about Dan is, you know, what he's able to do with these boys behind the scene. I really think that he's a great motivator. And I don't think that they're going to overlook any of these games because, you know, I guarantee that they had film on Minnesota won. Mm-hmm. You know, they've probably got that floating around. They've probably got film out there talking about, you know, Alabama losing, things like that. You know, he's a big propaganda guy, and I'm sure he's pumping these boys up, letting them know, hey, man, we just need a couple things, a couple breaks to go our way. And the only reason that we don't make it is if we don't dominate these teams on the way out. I mean, if they can just do like they did last week and hang 50 points on everybody. And I mean, if you're talking like 50-0, mm-hmm. if you're able to do that the rest of the season, and maybe it comes to an opportunity where they do allow a couple two-loss teams in, it's going to be hard to keep a team like Florida out, you know, that does have some quality wins on their resume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think it's huge for them going up in these last couple games, going to go to a really good bowl game. The momentum. Mm-hmm. Even if they don't accomplish their goals this year, it's just big for the continued momentum of Dan Mullen's program. I'm just kind of curious to see how all that plays out.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a good one. It should be a good game. What time is this one again?
This will be, noon your time, 11 a.m. Central. So it's going to be one of the first games of the day on Saturday.
It's going to be a tidbit nip out there, huh? I did look it up. It's like Gainesville's not that much temperature difference right now. Like, it's cold right now, like it's cooled down.
Mm-hmm.
And come kickoff, I think it's going to be I think it's just going to be maybe like 10-20 degrees less, but nothing like, just, you know, not Wyoming cold or anything, you know.
Well, one thing I do know, Shane, once we start talking weather, that's when
our beds are off.
All right, Shane, let's jump on down to College Station,
Giga Magus,
where Jimbo Fisher met with the media here this week to preview the South Carolina matchup. And, you know, the Aggies quietly, obviously after, you know, some really tough games to start the season out, not great showings. But here in recent weeks, Shane, a lot of their young guys have really started to emerge. It seems like they're really starting to buy in and understand a little bit more of what Jimbo's asking them. Kellen Mond is not playing. He's not putting up Heisman numbers or anything, but it just seems like he's fully grasping what Jimbo wants from him now, and it's just made the offense that much more effective on the field. Thoughts on Texas A&M, Shane? Because, you know, while they're going through a little bit of a lull here in the schedule, and I'm not necessarily talking about South Carolina, I'm talking about the games before, but I guess you could say the way South Carolina is playing, they could factor into that, but Texas A&M's got some big games coming up here at the tail end. If they, you know, they've had 2 weeks to prepare for this one.
Mm-hmm.
If they continue to progress and do it against South Carolina and then take a step forward, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead, but Georgia and LSU, I mean, these are games that are winnable for this team if they continue to progress. Thoughts on the direction of Jimbo's program there?
Yeah, this is kind of a big game for both teams, I think, you know, because there have been some rumblings about Jimbo. You know, there's a lot of people weren't expecting three losses, even though I think you and I were, I mean, we really saw at least two on the schedule, possibly three, you know, but there's a lot of people that thinks maybe they should have been competing already with teams like Alabama and Clemson, you know. So, you know, they've had some ugly games on their schedule. You think about the Arkansas one, you know, here's a team that you've dubbed the worst team to ever play college football. You know, that one came down to the wire. So I think they've got to come out and prove here, because people remember what you do in November. If Jimbo's able to close out strong, it gives them some momentum in the offseason, especially recruiting, to build off of. It's a young team, and they're able to come back next year. Now, if you look the other side of the ball, you got Muschamp. You know, everybody wants to fire him, but they can't afford it, it feels like, you know. So it's the same situation. Muschamp, yeah, nobody wants a victory more than him, I guarantee it, because when South Carolina's winning, people aren't pointing fingers up there. So that's what he wants. So there's a lot riding on this game, man.
Yeah, and how wild would it be, Shane? Muschamp can't beat Georgia, can't beat Texas A&M. Losing all the other games, but then here he is, turns around and potentially wins these games that can't beat Clemson. What if he beats Clemson too?
Oh my God! I mean,
imagine. Dude, they'd have to give him an extension, don't you think?
Absolutely. You beat Clemson, that's an automatic at least one extra year on your contract, I would think. So, trust me, nobody. I want it. I want them to beat Clemson. But they're gonna have their hands full. And you know, one thing about Texas A&M. They've had problems. If you look at their three losses, you're talking Alabama, Clemson, Auburn, all three of those games, Texas A&M didn't have one running back have more than 30 yards rushing. You know, so you can't – if South Carolina makes Mond the only weapon on that team, they have a chance to win it. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's going to be the game plan. I think that was the game plan last week with Appalachian State, but they just, you know, they had some banged up players, and I think they're going to get them back this week. So it should be an interesting ball game, man.
Well, let's kick it over to Jimbo, Shane. I thought this was some interesting comments on his young team and how they continue to progress. And then he really took a deep dive here on South Carolina's defensive line, and a guy that is not getting enough respect nationally, I don't think, South Carolina receiver Bryan Edwards. I think he's going to be all SEC. I think that's a no-brainer, but I think he may start popping up on some All-American teams as well.
I think you're three scholarship seniors now, so I wanted to ask you, what is the good and bad of having such a young team?
Well, I mean, I think the good is you see the future as if you keep progressing and getting better, which I think you can see. And you see a lot of us, you know, a lot of the guys that are making plays on offense and defense and even special teams. You see all that youth. You see the excitement. But at the same time, you know, you wish they always could grow up and know more quicker. I mean, and handle situations, how to practice, how to do this, how to deal with that situation. So but also that innocence sometimes gives you they don't feel things at times either. You know what I mean? They don't realize what they're in time. They're just playing. And sometimes that's good too. So, but it's great, and I think that's who we are. And the good about it is that you can see that we've definitely recruited the right guys, and I think they got great futures. And I think where we're going and how we're getting there is the right way. We're playing the right way, doing the right things, and those guys are having a huge part of it, along with some of the upperclassmen who I think will come back and play very well. So I think you see the future is extremely bright. But at that time, you know, there's always a – as I say, a knucklehead thing that happens that has nothing to do with anything but one word, experience in time. And sometimes you got to fight through those things.
Hey, Jimbo, their defensive line, Wanham gets a lot of headlines, Ken Law, but this Aaron Sterling guy is putting up some huge numbers. How much has he made them more complete?
I mean, all the way across. You look at their defensive line, I say that they're one of the top in this league. I mean, to say who's the top, you can argue back and forth, but they're right there in that conversation. I mean, when you go across the board from ends, tackles, play the run, play the pass, be able to make him, I mean, stunts and, you know, so I got him one-on-one or on a run block, we can get him, and all of a sudden he stunts and he gets an inside stun. Or I mean, those guys are a pain now. They really are, and they're coached very well. So, and do a good job on defense. They are a complete defensive line, and having all those guys on the end and inside makes it tough.
Hey, Coach, going back to Bryan Edwards, what kind of threat is he, and what does he really add to that offense?
I mean, you're talking about the leading receiver in school history of South Carolina. They've had some daggone good guys there. I mean, some good guys. That guy named Sterling Sharp there one time was pretty good, too. I mean, and they threw it back then with Todd Ellis. They threw it a bunch back then. So, I mean, this guy's big. He's long. He's physical. Can catch the underneath ball and run with it. Can catch the ball over the top. Can jump ball and get the ball. He's a punt return guy. Got yards after catch. Physical in the block. Yeah, I mean, touchdown catches, red zone with his body. I mean, he'll be a great pro. This guy's going to be a great pro.
All right, Shane, I don't know if you caught it there, and I don't know if this is breaking news or anything, but, you know, there's been speculation that Kellen Mond may not return for his senior season. And I think a lot of that was, you know, more in the preseason than anything. But just based on Jimbo's comments, they're talking about what a young team he's got and then his kind of upperclassmen returning.
Yeah.
It certainly sounds like he is indicating that Kellen Mond will be back, which I think is the right move for him. But I just thought that was kind of noteworthy. And then Jimbo makes a great point and kind of something you hit on there. If they can't run the ball, going up against one of the SEC's best defensive lines, I mean, that's been a great equalizer for both these squads, Texas A&M and South Carolina. When South Carolina can rush the ball, they're beating everybody. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be really interesting how this plays out. And this is going to be one of the bigger games of the weekend in the SEC.
Absolutely. And Texas A&M, boy, they've had 2 weeks to prepare for this bad boy. So I don't think they're going to overlook them. But, it's still going to be a pretty good ball game. I mean, this one, I think it's for a trophy too, right, Mike? We don't know what the name of it is, but it's collecting dust somewhere in one of these vaults. But we need to do a history lesson on that one.
Well, Shane, we can't talk South Carolina without a little bit of hot seat talk.
Oh, baby.
Oh, my God, we're burning alive!
Fire. Damn hot, real hot. Hotter than this is my shorts. I can cook things in it. Little crotch pot cooking.
Well, can you tell me what it feels like?
Fool, what is hot? I told you again. When you're born on the sun, it's damn hot.
All right, Shane, jumping in down to Columbia, South Carolina. Will Muschamp met with the media here on Tuesday. And wouldn't you know it, Shane, once again, this guy's getting peppered with questions about staff changes and, you know, if the fans are buying in and, you know, what is his message to all them and everything. So we'll get to those clips in a minute here. But how distracting is this? Or is it at all, do you think? Because it seems like, you know, sometimes this buries programs. It buries weaker coaches. But we've also seen, on the other hand, I mean, hell, how many people were saying, as stupid as this was, and we never said it because we knew how fucking stupid it was, Philip Fulmer taking over in Tennessee. I mean, there's coaches that are able to block this crap out and continue to focus. And Will Muschamp's obviously been through this situation down at Florida, so he should have some experience. And I feel like there was some of this talk leading into the Georgia game, so we've already seen where maybe they kind of can, I don't want to say cancel out the noise or what have you, but just kind of quiet it down. Thoughts on the preparation and the focus there at South Carolina this week with, like I said, I don't think this guy's on like the hottest of hot seats by any means, but you can't ignore this stuff when you got these damn boosters coming out and saying this stuff and you got opposing coaches coming out and all the damn fans are mad and everything. So just how focused will South Carolina be on this game, do you think, considering all the drama surrounding it?
And here you are. You just want a good ball team, Mike, you know, and you're mad at your coach and you turn on SEC and there he is with Marty McGee singing a damn song in a truck and you just want to throw your remote through the TV.
He should have been recruiting that day, man.
Oh, man, he wasted all that time. He could have been recruiting, you know, could have been training up or studying up a little bit more on that Appalachian State game. But I don't know. Anyway, I digress. Is that a word? I'm using it.
Yep.
Okay, here's what I'm saying about South Carolina. Muschamp has had his back against the wall already this season. Like you said, going into that Georgia game, it was the same narrative. These guys, and I don't know what he's done to piss these reporters off, but they're not afraid to ask the questions down there, and they're not afraid of his responses. You know what I'm saying? So I think, you know, he's coming back next year. He needs to work on this in the offseason. Just watch hours and hours of Saban footage. Watch hours and hours of Pruitt footage. And you can change the narrative at these press conferences by your questions and how you answers and how you interact. And I think when he got all jovial. I think he let the fox in the hen house here, you know, because these guys are not they're not afraid to fire him off, and they should be. These are questions people want to know. There's, you know, there are answers we want to know, but usually you don't see them in some of these at some of these teams, you know. So, but anyway, now he's had his back against the wall, and he's answered. He went down to Georgia. He beat the Georgia Bulldogs, so he's fully capable of taking a team, this team, and beating anybody in the nation, because, you know, we Georgia's number four team in the nation. So I think he has the ability to beat Texas A&M. I think he has the ability to beat University of Clemson, you know, but the players, they've got to buy in. They've got to play phenomenal here on out. You cannot have Helinski missing open people. You can't have receivers dropping the ball. You got to get healthy. We got to get the running game going. There's a lot of things that have to happen for South Carolina to win out, obviously, but this team's fully capable of doing it, and it all starts with the ball coach.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's kick it over to him, Shane. Will Muschamp here on kind of had a lot to say here on the receiving core and how limited they are at the moment. Like I said, the lack of progress from his program here this season, a message to the fans, changes to the offensive line. And then this one specifically, I want to ask you on the back end. It sounds like they're leaving the door open for Jake Bentley. I know he's a senior, but he never redshirted. So I think they're going to use this as his redshirt year, obviously, and on a potential return for 2020.
Will, when Chai's out and Chavis is out, just how limited are you in terms of just attacking downfield with just Brian seemingly as your only downfield?
Well, I mean, threat. That's just it. You become very predictable, obviously. And when you don't have really a vertical threat that people have seen, and obviously we think Xavier as a young player is a very promising and has got a huge upside and is going to be a really good football player for us, but just hasn't done it consistently on our level. And, you know, it certainly limits you as far as some things, you know, as far as some of the run boxes you're going to face aren't going to be very favorable. And we've got to be able to get people off of us.
Will, do you want him to come back and play next year, and when do you expect that decision?
I do, and I think, again, we talked about December. You know, Gene, we talked about, you know, we're going to let the season get over, and then regular season, and then as we move into December, we'll have those discussions.
Will, on your Sunday teleconference, you kind of talked about progress being made. Have you made the progress you wanted to in year four? And if not, just kind of what's been the biggest hindrance maybe to that?
Well, this is a results business. It's about winning games at the end of the day, and we haven't won enough games. So that's the bottom line. So, you know, as far as the main progress that needs to be made is winning football games. So we haven't made that progress. I think over a 3-year period of time, this staff's won more games than any staff has in school history. So we actually have done a couple of good things around here. Okay, and we've had a very inconsistent year, and I'll continue to evaluate that. And when the season's over, make the decision we need to make moving forward.
Going off of that, Will, there was a report yesterday in Football Scoop, basically said that the administration is putting a little pressure on maybe making some staff changes. Is that true?
And no, that's absolutely false.
Okay,
and no one has said anything to me about anything about staff changes.
Do you anticipate any staff changes?
I'll evaluate the staff when the year's over with them, just like I always do.
Well, what's your message to the fans who have lost faith in this staff now in year four?
You know, again, we've had in our first 3 years more success than anybody else has, and we haven't played as consistently as we need to, and there's some things that we need to address as we move forward. And, you know, continue to support these players. Continue to support, you know, what they do. We've got another home game, and we need to get 2 wins and go to a bowl game. So, you know, we've had some success here before that some other people haven't, and we look forward to a long tenure here at South Carolina.
Are you guys considering any offensive line personnel changes?
No. I feel like that, you know, obviously weren't as effective as we needed to be Saturday night, and we certainly are more than capable of playing better.
Well, looking at the drop passes Saturday, how much of that was a lot of young receivers maybe just not having that experience, and how much was it anything else?
Well, I mean, again, I think there were some traffic, you know, throws that were, you know, going across the middle, and a body flashes in front. You got to keep focused and stay on the ball and catch the back tip of the ball in some of those situations. But, you know, the bottom line is the ball hits your hands, you need to catch the football, and that's get on the jugs a little bit more. And I know Brian's been that with some of the receivers. As we continue to move forward.
All right, Shane, so a lot going on there from old Will Muschamp. Hot seats heating up a little bit there, but, you know, aside that, we've discussed that at length. So what I really want to ask you on this one, I thought the biggest revelation, because I thought this was kind of a foregone conclusion. It still could be, but it's interesting to hear his comments there on Jake Bentley. And, you know, it was on a recent podcast. You know, I'm not trying to talk out of both sides of my mouth here, but you don't always want a true freshman playing in the SEC. Obviously, Helinski's not going to be a freshman next season. So I think they have been hurt by not having Jake Bentley on the field. Not to say he's like some awesome talent that's better than Helinski or anything, but just his understanding of the offense and the players and everything that goes with all the experience. But I just don't see how, and I'm already starting to see a lot of fans react this way. I do not see how you can bring Jake Bentley back to this team, considering the fact you have Helinski. I mean, that it's going to make for a really weird dynamic if they were to do that. And I don't know if you know this, Shane, but South Carolina also has an elite quarterback commit. I believe his last name's Dowdy from, I think he's from South Carolina. So you got, I don't know. You never make personnel decisions to ruffle the feathers of recruits, I don't think, because if recruits are bothered by that stuff, they don't have the makeup to play at college football in my mind. But I just don't understand. I understand why Muschamp would say this, but in reality, I just don't think Jake Bentley has a future at South Carolina. What are your thoughts on that?
It's a weird dynamic there. And I mean, because his dad's coaching there, so that's right. That's a factor. So I think if things don't go well, who's to say dad doesn't lose his job, you know? And this isn't just something that they like a mutual release. Instead of his dad getting fired, just be like, hey, you know, I'm gonna go away because my son's decided to play somewhere else or something like that. You know, we're gonna eventually find out what happened, but do you want Bentley? I mean, I think if you're Muschamp, I think you want him, man. I hope they don't lie to him and tell him that he has an opportunity to be the starting quarterback next year. I don't know. I mean, what do you do? Because there would have been plenty of times this year that Helinski would have got yanked, man, that Bentley would have been in there, and maybe he would have provided the spark that they needed. Who knows? They may have a better record now if Bentley was in there. We've seen it with Tennessee. Garantano didn't start out great, you know, and then eventually throughout the season, he came in there and provided spark when needed and helped Tennessee win games. I think Bentley could have done the same thing at South Carolina. So if I'm Muschamp, I'm trying to get him to come back. He is South Carolina. I mean, he loves that team. But if you're Bentley, how do you do that? This isn't the Jalen situation where he's got a whole year. You know, he's got one last shot, and is he going to do it on the bench, or is he going to go somewhere and create some film? So, because he wants to play in the NFL, you know.
Right. Now, that's a good point. So I like that you countered me, Shane. You made a lot of good points there. And then just quickly, what are your thoughts on this? Let's just say, and I have no indication that this is what Jake Bentley is leaning to do, but I think it makes sense that he, you know, leaves and is a graduate transfer.
Do I think he will?
No, what I was going to ask you is, it seems like there's several spots in the SEC, and I'm looking at Georgia, I'm looking at LSU, I'm looking at Texas A&M if Kellen Mond were to go pro or something like that. I'm looking at Alabama. Any chance that old Jake Bentley, hell, Shane, Arkansas, depending on who takes over there, any chance another school, is there a school maybe you see where Jake Bentley being an ideal fit if he were to leave South Carolina and stay in the SEC?
That's good. And obviously Vanderbilt is on top of that list. You know, I think he'd be a guaranteed start. I mean, he's going to go somewhere that he could play immediately. We've joked about him, and we've been with them through the whole season, but you can't rule Arkansas out. I mean, we don't know KJ is going to be ready next year, but if you have somebody like Bentley up there, you know, somebody that he really can learn from, you know, that would be a good landing spot for him. So those are two teams that I would be leaning more toward. I think that the other ones would be tough.
Oh, wait, I just thought of one more. Sorry, I forgot about
Georgia.
This. Well, I said that one, but how about Missouri with Kelly Bryant gone? I mean, that's why Kelly went up there, to learn from Dooley, get better expertise on the NFL. If Dooley's still there, Dooley and Bentley.
I know. And then, that's a good one. But I don't know. Are they trying to go more toward the RPO? Not saying that Bentley can't run it, but, you know, I don't know. I think there's a lot of interesting. It wouldn't surprise me if he leaves the SEC, to be completely honest. Somebody where he doesn't have to play South Carolina. He doesn't, he just kind of creates his own narrative. And I think that's the move for him. But I've seen crazier things.
All right, Shane, last game we got to break down here. Let's jump on down to Nashville.
Take it down.
Derek Mason met with the media here on Tuesday. The Commodores are in a tough spot here, Shane, coming off that 56-0 shutout against Florida. Of course, they're going to be playing a significantly different offense. It's kind of, it's funny that you said you called Kentucky kind of the wing T. That's exactly how Derek Mason called it. And we've seen this offense of Kentucky gets stifled by Georgia and, to a degree, Tennessee after some first quarter adjustments. I know Vanderbilt doesn't have the talent of those teams, but certainly Derek Mason, a solid coach here on the defensive side of the ball. You would think Vanderbilt would be able to scheme up some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. What's your thoughts on this matchup, Shane? Because Vanderbilt desperately needs a win here. I think it's fair to say Kentucky kind of, I don't want to say floundering because they've won a couple games here, but when after everything they put into that Tennessee game and to still come up short, I'm very curious to see how they respond on the road. I think this is a dangerous game for Kentucky. I think if they don't come out and have the right focus and energy, I think Vanderbilt could sneak up on them.
I think they got to – I mean, Kentucky can run the ball, man. I mean, they've been doing it week after week after week, and I think Vanderbilt's really had a hard time of stopping it. Now, Florida didn't really exploit that much, but they didn't really need to.
Right.
I think Vanderbilt, that defense isn't as – I don't know. I thought it would be better, honestly. I thought this was going to be the year that Vanderbilt took the step forward, especially on the offense side of the ball. But I thought, Mason coming out, he sold me. He made me sound like this was the best defense that he was ever going to have. And I kept waiting for it to happen, and we've just not seen it. And I think they're struggling, man. They're really struggling here at the end. And I don't know if you've lost the locker room, but when you only had, two victories all season, it's really hard to get hyped up for a game, unless you're a senior and this is your last opportunity, or something like that. Or maybe you're trying to work your way up the depth chart for the next season. I know Mason's pumped up because his back's against the wall, but I don't know about this team, though, because I didn't see a lot of energy in that Florida game.
Yeah, maybe they just have to come out and also fight for their coach,
Yeah,
that's something to consider as well.
And do they have the coaches back? Because here you heard just a few weeks ago the media was asking questions about the locker room, and Coach Mason act like he didn't even know what was going on. So, how attached is he to that locker room?
That's a good point. So let's kick it over to Mason, Shane, who recently said, after that Florida game, changes need to be made. He kind of clarifies what he was talking about there on the status of Mo Hassan and Riley Neal. Sounds like the Commodores getting a quarterback back this week, so that's solid. And then on the message to his team, given their struggles, this is always a tough question at this time of year, but it's one that Derek Mason is facing.
After last week's game, you said in your post-game presser, you're going to have to make some changes. What does that mean for this week and for this Saturday?
Well, man, it's schematical. In a little bit. I mean, it's a different type of ball game. So you got to make some schematical changes. You got to make some personnel changes. It's good to get Riley back. And obviously, having a quarterback who can operate, the way you want to operate, in terms of being able to push it down the field and give yourselves an opportunity to, spit it out and run, as well as play action, get the protections flipped. That's important. But then you also got to look at any other, opportunities, to get better. You got to put your best guys on the field. Not saying that we haven't, but, the guys aren't playing well, we've got to be able to look at that too. And looking at, where we are, defensively, there's some guys that are coming along defensively, and guys that have had to play have been a high ton of snaps, and you just got to make sure from a rotational standpoint, you can continue to utilize your depth or get guys on there, right now who aren't as dinged up. And as I've looked at it, man, we've been able to talk about at the beginning of the week, how are we going to maximize, the roster? I think you always start with players and then you work to scheme, but you don't go the other way around. It's still a player's game. And I think with that, start using that as a starting point, we were able to, get to the right fits and getting the right personnel on the field. So that's what this game's going to look like for us. I mean, it's a matchup game, a pure matchup game, and we're going to have to make sure, again, that we match up to give us a chance.
Is there any possibility of Moe returning this year, or do you know for sure if he's out or not long term?
I saw Moe, in that practice today, and that was, good to see him out there. He wasn't dressed, so he's doubtful, for this week. But Moe's mindset is, to get back. It's just been a slow process. Like I've said before, with concussions, everyone is different. So, for him, he hasn't walked away from it. He hasn't checked out of it. I think he's very much into the idea of, returning as fast as he can. But again, we're going to be safe and, smart with what we do.
Riley came off the bench, threw a touchdown pass to finish the Missouri game. Then he came out through a touchdown pass on a drive at the beginning of the South Carolina game. Did you sense more of a comfort level with him after essentially losing his job for part of one game and then coming back? He looked more comfortable when he got back.
I think he is more comfortable. I think, for him, I've been asking, him for a while just to continue to push himself to play faster and practice so that games slow down for him. And I think that's exactly what he had, began to do, before the injury. And even watching him out in the practice, he was much more intentional about, talking to guys and looking at, what we were doing schematically. And even, during the protocols, for him, he was taking every mental rep. And that was something before, Riley, it worked. But I think this was a different type of a workload for him. And like I told him, in this conference, man, you have to prepare differently. It's not any place that you've been before. Every place in this conference is new, and every team that you play is formidable. So, and the preparation, the sense of urgency has been greater, much greater, since that time. And I think for him, as he's benefited and started to become better, he makes us better.
Derek, what's your message to the team this week and for the rest of the year, given your record is what it is?
Yeah, one day. One day. I mean, that's what you do, man. You take it one day at a time, man. You put a good day's worth of work together, and then what you do is, man, you try to make sure, man, that you can move it from, today, to tomorrow, and then at the end of the week, man, you've got a cumulative body of work, man, that hopefully, maybe gives you the confidence to go do what you do. And if you do it fast, if you do it hard, and if you understand, what the game is going to be, and you go into it the right way, the ball finds energy. That's one thing about football. Football finds energy. And so, when you can create your energy, okay, man, you're confident in what you do, you can play the game and not have to worry. And right now, that's exactly what we got to be focused on, letting our energy find the ball and letting the ball find us. And if we do that, then we'll be good.
All right, Shane. So Vanderbilt, man, so they went through the, the slate there early. Some really, really tough teams. It just seems like they've never quite recovered from that. But it's still, with Kentucky, ETSU, and Tennessee, I know they're not going to be favored in two of those games, but I don't think it's out of this world to say, if they get some consistency at the quarterback position, if the defense plays a little bit better, I mean, they can get some momentum going into the offseason. I think this is kind of Vanderbilt's last stand to kind of show something. Because I think if they lose this one particularly, if they lose it by a large margin, I mean, it's kind of like they're just waving the white flag at this point.
Yeah, and that's it. They're going to have to make a decision this week, man. It felt like this team's been kind of in limbo. The Missouri game really caught you and me both, and I think the nation off guard. We weren't expecting that. We thought, damn, here we go. Vandy making that late push like they usually do, and then they just trailed off, scored 7 points in the last two games. So is this a week that they rally and take that step forward? Because, again, people remember what you do in November. And if they could close out and beat Tennessee again, Mason retains his position, they get a little little juice right there before recruiting season. You never know what happened, but or do they take the path of least resistance? Do these studs not decide they don't want to play, you know, and does the team fall apart and did they lose out and Mason lose his job? So, I mean, it honestly feels like you're going to take the red pill, the blue pill, you know? So what are they going to do this week, Mike?
All right, Shane, let's jump it down to Lexington. Mark Stoops met with the media this week to preview this matchup. And, you know, we don't have the beginning of his audio here, but he just really stressed the fact that, you know, they were very frustrated with that Tennessee game. Basically, you know, they almost stole it there from Tennessee. They dominated in a lot of aspects. We already covered that this week on this show, but and they still to come away with a loss. It's very, very demoralizing, and I'm a little concerned with how Kentucky's going to respond. When you got 2 weeks to prepare, when you outplay the opponent for the vast majority of the game, and you still come up short, Shane, I think in college football in particular, sometimes it's very, very difficult to get back up off the mat when you put so much into a game like that, and you probably should have won it. Thoughts on how Kentucky responds in this matchup here against Vanderbilt?
I think you stick with what's working. You know, there was opportunities last week to win this game, and they kind of got away from it. And, you know, I've noticed a few people a little upset about Bowden Saturday, but, man, the kid, you know, I honestly feel like he's a quarterback. That's what he wants to be, but he's trapped in a wide receiver body. You know what I'm saying? It's just he doesn't have the mechanics needed to be a quarterback, but he does have the mechanics to be that X factor for the Kentucky Wildcats and get 3, 4, 7, 10 yards at a time. You know, he's very dynamic, and they just got to keep doing that. You keep doing that, you're going to win. You're probably going to win the rest of your – who they got the rest of the season? They got Vanderbilt, and then who they got after them?
Then they got UT Martin at home. And then they finished the season in Louisville, which has shown some life. But, I mean, hell of a shame. There's an outstanding chance they win all of them.
Yeah, just keep your script going. You'll be fine. You'll win out. Don't get cute here at the end. You don't have to be. Just rely on your offense to keep the defense on the field. Keep your boys rested when they come in there. Give everything you got to get a 3 and out. I mean, that's what you have. Next year we're going to try something different. You'll have Terry back, but let's close out the season doing what you're good at, and that's running the ball.
Now, the only issue there, Shane, with Bowden.
I got you guessing now. Bow tie.
The only problem there with the way they're running their offense, Shane, and it's kind of brought up here in Mark Stoops' presser, but how do you get that consistency going with the passing game, the way you're going about it? And we just saw it against Tennessee. You can be dominant in so many statistical categories, but when you're not getting in the end zone, when you're basically a non-factor in the passing game and teams know what you're going to do. I mean, it's incredibly hard to keep doing it. I know they've been very successful despite the fact that defenses kind of know what's coming, but they're still managed to do it. It's, you know, it speaks to just how efficient they are on offense and the job Eddie Grant's doing. But I mean, it's incredibly difficult to accomplish that. So let's kick it over to Mark Stoops discussing that. And then on Lynn's ability to throw the ball, can he do it? I mean, I've seen some games where it looks like he can, but in that Tennessee game, it clearly was not his day throwing the ball.
We've been moving the football.
Mark, how hard would that be, though, when you're essentially running the wishbone, more or less, to then throw in a passing quarterback and, you know, start running the spread? How realistic is that?
It is hard. However, we do work on our base offense all week, and Lynn does it as well. So if Lynn's not a quarterback, all of our players and the route running and everything is still there. A lot of the core of our offense is still there. Now, some of the unique plays built for Lynn are totally, totally new.
But just in terms of timing and all that, I would think it would be really hard to do.
It is hard. It is. There's no question. There's no doubt about it. You have to – you know, continue to build to your strengths and what you feel give you the best opportunity to win. It's tough.
Like you said, you're confident in Lynn's throwing abilities and passing. Is he confident in his throwing ability? It seemed like there were some plays where they're called pass plays, but he took off running, which I don't blame him. He can really run the ball. And is there a fine line there?
It is. You know, it's a tough balance there, truthfully, because Lynn really does have confidence in throwing ability and wants to throw it. And it probably at times, you know, wants to keep him more off balance, and we do as well. You know, you watch that game, and here's part of it. They didn't necessarily play a lot like Missouri, where they just completely loaded the box. You know, as I told you against Missouri, I felt like there were definitely pass plays there. The weather dictated it, and we were creating some explosive plays in the run game. So we didn't have to go to it as much by the way they were playing. Tennessee didn't go to that extreme. They mixed it in and did a nice job, but again, we created very explosive run plays. But they didn't just wholesale put everybody up there, you know, to just give us some, I should say, you know, give us the greater opportunity of throwing the ball, you know. So you have to see how teams play you, because those guys have been covering good. So a couple of those, you know, where we had some pass plays, it wasn't like he had quick, you know, really free throws. And there's times where that takes, you know, a rhythm. It takes timing. It takes, you know, proper reads on the side. And he does a lot of things good. We just got to try to put him in the best position we can. And predictable pass is not the best situation to be in.
You know, the thing that drives me nuts is, you know, you're trying to compare teams, and you can't. You know, Tennessee has – their defense has been playing phenomenal lately. Say what you want. They're not the best defense in the SEC, but they're moving up, you know. And then you got teams like Georgia. You know, they're able to create defensive plays that prevent passes and runs. You know what I'm saying? You know, something Coach talks about is Missouri sold out to the run. You know, Vanderbilt is going to sell out toward the run. They have to. They can't afford to put a few in the box and keep an eye on those receivers the entire time. That they're just, their defense isn't equipped for it this year. You know what I'm saying? So I think if Eddie comes out and has a couple of scripted passes for Bowden, I think they'll be fine, man. I think he'll be, you know, just some easy routes, some, you know, some surefire bets, because these guys are going to be loading the box.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they're going to have to do. So this is going to be another interesting one where I think more than anything, more than just the final results, because obviously Kentucky's going to be favored. I'm just going to be fascinated to see which team shows up, if they both do. I mean, that's obviously what you're going to want to see. But I got a feeling that you know, one of these teams is going to struggle to show up and give their A game. And I'm kind of leaning towards Kentucky at this point, given all that we've seen. But I don't know. I give the coaching edge to Mark Stoops over Derek Mason. So we'll just have to see which coach gets his team more prepared this week.
So you're leaning more toward Vanderbilt with the victory? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say victory, but I just, man, it's kind of like I said there, Shane. 2 weeks putting everything into that Tennessee game, and you lose the way you lost when you dominated the football game. I just think it's incredibly hard for them to just wipe that slate clean and just show up and do it again against Vanderbilt. I think there's going to be a serious hangover effect for the Wildcats this week.
I got you. Okay, I see what you're saying. Well, and probably the basketball game. Sorry about that, fellas. We just found out that you lost to, what are they called again?
Evansville?
What was the purple something? Purple.
The purple people eaters?
God, that sucks, man. Hey, there's plenty of bourbon up there, boys, you know, and it's early in the season. They'll be fine, you know, but damn, they took some L's this week, Mark.
They sure did, Shane, and that's all I got on this one. You got anything before we hop off here?
No. I won't be here tomorrow. I don't want to disappoint you guys, but Mike's going to be coming out doing his thing. I apologize. Just, I've got a work thing I've got to do. which requires a lot of drinking and a lot of kiss ass. So I'm sorry, but I will be back Friday morning for the pick'em pod.
All right, Shane, so that's going to do it on this one. And don't forget, please give us a 5-star rating and reviews, Apple Podcasts. You fill that out for us, and we'll send you a koozie free of charge. Hit us up on thatsecpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll be happy to hook that up for you. So that's going to do it, Shane. Thanks for joining me, as always. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols.